In this episode of Geo Talk, we have some good news on geocaching in national parks. We read out some more tips on caching through the winter months. And we announce a new competition on being sneaky while geocaching. All this and a little bit more on Geo Talk. Welcome to episode 63 of Geo Talk for August 2010. I'm your host, Spin Doc Bob from the Spin Doctors. And if you've found us for the first time, welcome. I hope you enjoy the podcast. And to everyone who's come back again, thanks for subscribing and listening. If you want to subscribe to the podcast and you haven't already done so, there are links on the right-hand side, the bottom right-hand side of the website, where you can either subscribe through iTunes, or quite often I get asked where the RSS feed is, and it's down in that bottom right-hand corner. We might over the next few weeks try and make it a little bit more prominent and let it stand out a bit more. But if you head to the website, geotalkpodcast.com, you'll be able to subscribe to the podcast and get it when it comes out, typically once a month. Now, some information to let you know about. As I said in the intro there, geocaching in national parks, the ACT Park Service down in Canberra have recently put a notice up on their website which says that geocaching is now permitted in Tibbimbilla only where it involves no digging and burying of objects or depositing of objects in rock shelters or other cultural heritage sites, as long as it doesn't involve littering as well. It says the use of Tibbimbilla for geocaching will be monitored and appropriate action will be taken if the activity has an impact on the values of the area. So that appeared also on the Australian Geocaching Australia forums, and although the wording is a little bit vague, I mean, it does talk about burying of objects, which of course isn't allowed in geocaching, certainly shows that there is a positive attitude towards it at the moment. Let's hope it stays that way for the region. One thing I've noticed with a lot of new geocaches that are being placed in the last few months and even in the last few years is that they're missing the stash note. Now, I think this is a really important thing that you need to include in any geocache of any size that you put out. Of course, nanos are probably going to be the exception, but micros in particular, you can still include a stash note, and there are various sizes that you can download from different websites. I might put up one or two links on the GeoTalk podcast website for you to download. But really, not only should you include a note about what the geocache is, but also your contact details. And I know Richery recently had someone contact him because the cache had been muggled. I think it was down in Melbourne. The cache had been muggled, and it didn't have a stash note, but it did have one of his contact cards, one of those annoying business cards that some people put in geocaches. And it turned out that the muggle who'd found the cache had contacted Richery, and I think now it's back in the hands of its owners. But certainly it highlights the need to make sure that you do put in some contact details, even if it's just an email address that you use only for geocaching, or if you put your mobile number in there as well, that could be useful. Well, in case you weren't aware, we're coming up into National Science Week, which runs for the middle 2 weeks of August, or the last 2 weeks, somewhere around there. And anyway, there's a number of events occurring around the country, and you can check that out. If you do a web search for National Science Week, you should come up with the website for that. One of the events that's being held by Teen Hua down in Canberra, she's organising through the CSIRO Double Helix Science Club a GPS treasure hunt. Now, it's for anyone, particularly for non-geocaches, to get them interested in the activity. And their description says, take part in a high-tech treasure hunting activity called geocaching. It's a worldwide hide-and-seek game played with GPS technology. And players use GPS receivers to locate hidden containers called geocaches and then share their experiences online. The event will take about an hour to complete, and it's going to be held on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, the 20th, 21st and 22nd of August from 10 till 4, and that'll be at CSIRO Discovery over at Black Mountain in Canberra. Now, even if you are a geocache and you don't want to take part, there's plenty of other activities that will be at that area and also anywhere around the country. So once again, check out National Science Week. talking about information and sessions and learning things. Recently, I held a workshop or a presentation at the recent Geocaching New South Wales AGM about puzzle caching. And I've put the presentation up online, and you can find that on the Geocaching New South Wales website. It's not the only one that's up there. There's a number of different websites and web pages that have been set up to help you solve geocaching puzzles. I know Zitherin has regarded as probably one of the most prolific puzzle hiders, who's based in Adelaide. He's given a presentation. There's a YouTube video we'll give you a link to there, but also there's a couple from overseas. So check those out. If you go to the website geotalkpodcast.com, you can go to some of those links and presentations on how to solve puzzle caches. Anyone who owns a Lowrance GPS of the one of the Endura range, you'll be interested to note that there will be an update, a firmware update for Australia coming up soon. Now, in the US and Europe, they've already received firmware update 1.4. 1.5 is meant to come out fairly soon, sometime this month, hopefully. And there'll be an update for Australia Pacific as well. And it will address a number of the issues that I highlighted when I reviewed the unit back in April. So if you've got an Endura unit made by Lowrance, keep your eyes open on their website for an update that should be coming up sometime this month. If you're looking to upgrade your GPS or looking to buy a new one, Groundspeak have got a fantastic resource on their geocaching website. When you enter your details in your My Profile section, most of you would have recalled that you get to add which GPS unit or units you own, and you can put in a review and a star rating. Well, they've gathered up all that data, and now they have more than 100 units that are listed and reviewed and have descriptions and so forth in their GPS review section of the website. So you can check out all those reviews and hopefully get a clearer picture, or maybe a not so clear picture, about what GPS unit you want to buy for geocaching. And recently I received an email from Dan, goes by the name of Ethical Hacker over in the US, and he was wanting me to highlight a website that he's been building called cachingtree.com. And it's an interesting one. What it's trying to do is create like a family tree of geocaches. And I think I've seen one or two versions before. I know someone on the Geocaching Australia forum tried to set this up once before. But it's an interesting little project. What you do is you basically put in yourself, your ID into the caching tree, and you also highlight the person who introduced you to geocaching, assuming that someone did. And you know, over time, it will build up a big tree. It's fascinating to have a look. It's still got a huge number of gaps. I think the tree would be quite a large one if it ever was completed, but check it out at cachingtree.com. And in news hot off the press, Groundspeak have released their Android application for geocaching. Now, just like the iPhone app, this particular app for Android phones only will allow you to search for geocaches in your area by using the phone's GPS. It will connect via your 3G network so that you can get information live from the Groundspeak geocaching website. And then, of course, you can log your finds and post notes and so forth while you're out in the field. So if you want to check that out, if you've got an Android phone, go to geocaching.com/Android. Well, now it's time to head across the ditch over to New Zealand, and it's time to get an update from Radio Nut 50.
Hi, Darren, and to the listeners from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand. Last week, Butterfly Lady and I travelled through Tauranga City in the North Island and enjoyed caching an area that has what is now a fairly typical significant growth in caches being laid. We enjoyed the trip and enjoyed being taken to a number of special parks with views around the area, one of the reasons we're involved in this fun hobby. A week or so before that, we had a week in Darwin, based around a business trip but including a few days caching holiday, of course, in this very different city for us Kiwis. This was actually our second trip to Darwin after a gap of around 3 years, and we enjoyed finding many more hides available to travellers now. It really is a different experience for caches from New Zealand, where there's little about that'll actually harm a searcher, to instead cache while worrying about snakes and salties and other things that might get you. However, it was the little biting ants that gave us the most troubles, I must say. Our thanks go to the caches of Darwin and Tauranga for setting up all those hides for travellers like us to enjoy. An aspect that emerges from both of these caching trips is the often spoken of increase in the hiding of very small caches. We found a number of micros hidden in bush areas, where an ammo can could easily reside, and in some cases even nano-sized hides in rural areas for some reason. Those have been caching for a while, especially some like my partner Butterfly Lady, who enjoys the transfer of travel bugs and geocoins, really do wish to encourage caches to hide the biggest box possible every time. One enjoyable aspect when returning to an area like these after a few years is searching for and actually finding caches that were DNFs last time. In each case, you usually find it in a place where you're sure you searched last time, but whatever the cause, such finds are very satisfying. A special caching event that's coming up soon in Auckland is Tramper Ted's Geocaching Skills Day Version 2. This is a follow-on from a very successful event held a few years back, where a number of experienced caches are invited to run workshops on topics such as puzzle-solving strategies, hiding a cache, camo secrets, cache page design, caching technology, and much more. New caches and those with lots of experience will all enjoy this day, catching up with some of the techniques from the masters. I'm sure this will be a really fun gathering in Blockhouse Bay, Auckland City, on the 12th of September. A good gossip item this month from New Zealand is that our Kiwi top cache finder Money Dork has been slowed down a little by an operation that was needed to repair bodily damage experienced while caching a while back. The good news is he's recovering well from the op and has been out caching with one arm in a brace, so he continues to add to his total of nearly 7,600 finds. We wish you well, Wayne, and we'll be watching for your find rate to restore to that usual extraordinary numbers soon. Well, the scientists tell us that the 1st of August is the start of spring. So, good caching weather's on the way, folks. Time to start planning your caching trips. Back to you now, Darren.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. It's always good to hear about what's happening over in New Zealand, and hopefully I'll be able to catch up with you and a number of other Kiwi caches in September next year when I come over for the Rugby World Cup and a little bit of geocaching in between. Well, now it's time for the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, and this one was prompted by someone who wrote in a few days ago. The question is, which geocacher has got to 1,000 finds in the fastest time? So that's from 0 to 1,000 in the fastest time. We'll give you the answer to that at the end of the podcast. Let's have a look at some of the events that are occurring around Australia over the next few weeks. On the 25th of August is a pub lunch, another one being held in Adelaide by the Barramundis. On the 29th of August is Beaker's Meet and Greet Geocaching Drive, and that'll be down in Mount Gambier in South Australia. On the 3rd of September is Spring Break by the Wackies over out in the bush east of Adelaide. And on the 4th of September, they'll also be holding the Spring Campfire Dinner roughly the same location. On the 11th of September is the Coffee and Cache at the Mangrove River Cafe in Western Australia, down there in Bunbury. And on the 14th of September is another Bung Lunch that's being held in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, down in Victoria. If there's one of those events are near you, hopefully you'll make it to it. And if not, why not create one of your own events, and hopefully we'll read it out on GeoTalk in the next edition. Well, thanks to Carl Imapom, who looks after the geostuff.com.au store, we're going to run another competition for the month of August. And this one, he's giving away a sneaky pack or a sneaky cache pack. It's full of a couple of different sneaky cache containers, the type that we all love to find, particularly in those urban areas. To go into the draw to win this sneaky pack, all you need to do is email or call in your sneakiest geocaching moment. Now, it might be a sneaky hide that you've created. You don't have to go into too much detail about how you created and hid it. Or it might be a sneaky find, you know, maybe a find in the face of, you know, 1,000 muggles. How did you get around it? We'd love to hear your sneaky hide or sneaky find geocaching story. And to send it in, all you have to do is type it up or record it and email it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Or easier way to do it is just give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline, and that's 02-800-50-436. So that's 02-800-50-436. And we'd love to hear from you, and you've got to get them in before the end of the month, so before the 31st of August. And everyone who sends in a story will go into the prize draw to win a sneaky pack from geostuff.com.au. Well, after last episode, we had a few more winter caching tips that got sent in to us. Kylie, who's also known as KJWX from New Zealand, said, always keep a pair of gum boots in the car. And remember, pens don't often work in the very cold weather, so take a pencil or two with you. And we had another one from McAddy's. That's Ben, Karen and Eddie. They live in Ballarat, where it's pretty cold in the winter, and they found a good investment is a jacket that's both warm and waterproof. That way you don't have to worry about forgetting to pack your raincoat. They have a four-month-old baby, and they have a sling to carry him in. And they also have a small weatherproof cover that goes over the outside of the sling to keep him dry if it starts to drizzle. And it's very easy and small that you can fold it up and put it in your pocket. Well, there's two very good tips. Thanks for sending those in. Hopefully we won't have to use them for too much longer, as we're starting to come to the tail end of winter and the days are getting warmer and certainly a lot longer. But we had another one called in. This one I think comes from Darth Trader.
G'day, Darren. It's Darth Trader calling in a caching tip, or as Radio Not Fifth would call it, a caching top. So anyway, it's about maintenance. I've just done a few caches today, and on the way home, I've popped into one of my own caches just to see how it's faring in the cold weather, make sure the pen still works. I've got a couple of my own path tags in there, so I've got it as a path tag trading post. But I can't find anyone's left any path tags. I've only just taken mine. These people in New South Wales have got to get into it and make their own. And I'll need to start collecting some of them. But yeah, just replenishing some toys here. So what have we got? I'm dropping off a Tazo and old trading card of the Phantom series from when I was a kid, and some marbles and stuff. Just making sure it's all healthy, and it is. And it should see out the nice spring geocaching season quite well. I'm really proud of this cache. It actually cost me about $30 to set up. But if anyone comes to find whose tags at the end of the F3 freeway in New South Wales, it's well maintained. Okay, enjoy the show. Keep well. Bye.
Well, it's time now to have a look at the Geo Talk mailbag, and we had a few calls come in. First of all, this one comes in from FireSafe in South Australia.
Hi, Darren. It's FireSafe here from South Australia. I heard you talking about the consecutive day finds on show 62. Thought I'd give you a little bit of an update of what's happening over here in South Australia. Now, my 333 days has been going sort of untouched for over 12 months now. But Sushi Lord and the McKee clan are going hot at it to try and take over that record. So keep an eye out on those two. I think Sushi Lord's about at 262 at the moment, and the McKees are at 236. And they're doing quite a bit of planning to get past that 333 days. Not sure when they'll stop, but be worth keeping an eye out where they get to. Love the show. Catch you later. See ya.
Covert Hypnosis here again. Good day, listeners and everyone. Just out on a common hunt. About 11, it's not about half past 12 at night, just looking around for the big green shed. In your case, it's just turned up by Megabogan up in Hastings there, just off the Western Port Highway here. Okay. Rather than make you have to stand here and listen to me, I'll look you back and find it. I'm projecting, I believe, obviously, that I might need to get a bit higher purchase to find this one. I'll speak to you guys shortly. Yeah, listeners, it's Covert Hypnosis here again. Called back in only shortly after hanging up just before. While trying to find a better purchase to find the cage, I stuck my hand right on top of the bloody cage, so it wasn't too hard to find in the end. Got a bit of this street right here, put my torch away, I can still just read the paper. It looks a little bit scrumpled. There's a good chance of the previous finder here. Let's see how we go. And I'll open her up. Yeah, we have. We've got the Wellinators, which I believe they're just around the corner here. So they are down here at 12:15. I'm not really used to being beaten this time of night. It's another one I might go and take a look for after this, but this is Covert Hypnosis. Signing off this one. Bye for now.
Well, thank you to Firesafe and Covert Hypnosis for those calls. Don't forget, if you want to send in your own bit of audio, just save it into your mobile phone, 02800 5436. And when you're out in the field and you've got a first to find or just a geocaching thought that goes through your head, we'd love to hear from you. And just before we wrap up with the GeoTalk mailbag, we got one that's come across from across the Pacific with a question for the GeoTalk podcast.
Hey, Spin Doc Bob. This is David, a.k.a. Red Lights. As your listeners and you can tell, I might talk a little differently than you. That's because I'm from the United States, specifically Maryland, about 40 miles south of the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. The reason why I'm contacting you is because back at the beginning of 2010, you mentioned on the podcast that you had a geocaching goal of trying to find a cache a day or each day of the calendar year. I was wondering how you're doing. I had set the same kind of goal for myself just before the actual new year started, and while January wasn't very good to me, I've been able to clear the months of February, March, April, May, June, and July. Today's the first day of August, and like I said, I was just kind of wondering how you're doing. Maybe you can give us a little bit of feedback and let us know how your geocaching goal is going. Thanks. I love listening to the show. Even though I'm thousands of miles away, it's always good to hear from you all.
Well, thanks for that question, Red Light. I must admit, I haven't been keeping you up to date on that. And there's a little bit of a reason why. Overall, it's been a lot of hard work. And in fact, the month of July was the hardest month of trying to fill in those gaps on the calendar. The reason is twofold. One, there were 11 days that I had blank in July that I'd never cached on before, 11 dates. And of course, here in Australia, July is the month with the shortest days in it, that both June and July, because it's winter down here. And so if I didn't find it during my lunch break, which is not very likely, it meant that I had to go after work. And that meant waiting until I caught the train, had dinner, put Isaac to bed, and then helped tidy up a bit. So there were a couple of hard nights. Now, having said that, August has been a bit of a dream. There's only 4 days in that, and I've done three of them straight away, and I've got about a three-week break until I need to find the next one. September's going to be a bit challenging, and from then until through to the end of the year, I think I've only got about 20 days all up, with most of those in September, the last day being December 25. Strangely enough, I've never cached on Christmas Day. Now, the reason why I've kept it a bit quiet is I missed a day. Way back in February, on February 25, the next day, I had a very early rise to get a plane down to Melbourne. And in all the packing, I had set aside about an hour to go caching. I was just too exhausted and I fell asleep. And it wasn't until I woke up the next morning I realized that I'd missed that day. So even though I'll fill out most of the calendar, by the end of the year, I'll have one day still to go. So thanks very much for that question, Red Lights. I hope that answered your question. We'll be right back. two milestones come into GeoTalk. The first one was written in by Bruce of Calypso 62 here in Sydney. He said he wanted to share an FTF experience he recently had at a cache called Little Louis, which is located in a township called Louis between the Kapiti Valley and Mudgee out in central western New South Wales. He says he was excited because it was his first solo FTF, and it was on the way to the Mudgee Small Farms Field Day. Now, he said that when he was heading out there, he decided to check out the caches that were along the road that he was travelling and was surprised to find a virgin cache. Haven't heard that name for a while since we've call them FTFs these days. Anyway, he said that beforehand he'd severely sprained his ankle, and so when he was scrambling around the rocks looking for the cache at GZ, it proved a little bit difficult, but nothing was going to stop him if there was an FTF up for grabs. Anyway, a muggle friend of his found it, but he wouldn't touch it, so he had to go and grab it himself, and he found a blank logbook inside. He says all those feelings of satisfaction swept over him as he knew he had the FTF. Anyway, he says a big thank you to Bugger Me for the FTF prize, which was a scratchy lottery ticket. Unfortunately, he's not going to be shouting his mates out to a trip to Canada with the proceeds of that scratchy. So that's from Bruce Calypso 62. We had another milestone called in. This one comes from Zell Goriath.
G'day, Spin Doc. This is Zal Goriath, currently up in sunny Townsville, where it's about 25 degrees in the middle of July. And in my hands, I have the Great Wall of Fairfield, which would be my geocache find number 1,000. Hit the combined GCA GC last week, and now this is GC 1000 after about 324 days on the trail of this mad hobby. Thanks to everyone who's hidden them, and catch you around next month. See you later.
Now, we had a follow-up email from Zell Goriath, and he says just a quick shout-out to let you know that his first first 1,000 finds, which actually came in at 331 days, I think it was 324 that he mentions in the audio. Anyway, he says that that's now broken the previous record from Team Casho of 349 for the fastest 1,000 in New South Wales. He says the Australian record's held by Marcus Vitruvius, who now lives in the ACT, but let's just correct the record there, because I'll give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question. Now, the question was which caches were the fastest to get their first 1,000 finds. Now, the answer to that is actually Fang Soki, who's in Queensland, and this group have done it in the amazing time of 160 days. Next is Marcus Vitruvius, who used to be in Wodonga in Victoria, but now is in the ACT. He has 175 days. And just after that in the ACT, in case there's any controversy because he moved over there recently, Black Bunny is second in the ACT with 266. Going down the rest of the list, as I've said, Zell Goriath with 331 in New South Wales. O'Cholio in South Australia with 281. Two Wise Tassies in Tasmania with 215, Slink One in Victoria with 209, and in Western Australia, Rick Link with 526. No one in NT popping up on the stats yet. In New Zealand, ADV with 183 days in the North Island, and in the South Island, it's Drawpee with 234 days. So they're the fastest finders from 0 to 1,000. As we always say, it's not about the numbers. I checked up mine because I had to check my numbers. I came in at 1,676. Not too bad an effort. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Don't forget to get in your calls for the sneaky cache competition. The phone number is 02-800-50-436, or you can email it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, don't forget you can subscribe to the Twitter feed at Twitter, GeoTalkPodcast. There's a Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you, and also why not vote for us on iTunes. We might run another iTunes competition before the end of the year. Until next time, safe geocaching. Just before I finish up this podcast, as I was editing it over the weekend, I received a call from a geocaching friend of mine, Susan Mitchell, who's family known as the S's down in Canberra. Susan, Sean and the kids I've known for a number of years, in particular Susan and Sean, since April 2004 when I met them at a geocaching event down at Jindabyne that I put together. And quite unexpectedly, they turned up. I didn't expect them to be there. In fact, there was only a small group of us, and it was great to meet them. And over the next few years that I continued living in Canberra, we kept in touch with each other and hosted a number of events together. One of those being the ACT Cache of the Year event, which they then continued on for a number of years. Unfortunately, on Sunday afternoon, I received a call from Susan to say that her husband, Sean, had passed away in his sleep that morning. My condolences, Susan, to you and the kids, Camden and Charlotte. Sean was a great man and certainly one of those men that you call a gentle giant. He was he loved his kids and he loved his wife, and he certainly loved geocaching as well. I last bumped into them all at the Wagga Mega event in April, and as I said on my note online, I only wish I had have spent more time with you, but of course you never know where life is going to take you and what's going to happen. So to the S's, all the best, and I dedicate this particular podcast to you. Sean, rest in peace.